comfortable. Being comfortable is one of the disorders of our age. We have a whole culture and a society obsessed with the idea of being comfortable. Our homes have central heat and air conditioning, most of which are cranked up to eliminate even the slightest cool breeze in the winter, or any excessive heat in the summer, air conditioning. People have sweaters. Clothing, in effect, is almost free compared to what it used to be. Hundreds of years ago, clothing represented a sizable expense. All clothing was made by hand. And now, clothing is next to free. You can wear sweaters and jackets. You'll see people in cars in the rain in their cars with all the windows rolled up. Less than errant raindrop wet their shirt. In the meantime, all the windows were all fogged up. They'll scurry from their car into the mall through the snow. On the trails where I run here in beautiful Marin County, where I'm looking right now, all the sunny day hikers come out in legion and congest the trails. I see hundreds and hundreds of hikers out there on nice days, but when it's cool or overcast or rainy, I can literally walk for hours and not see a single hiker. There's people who live in beautiful areas, but they don't run outside. They sit there on a Threadmaster, or sit on a bicycle outdoors, or on a stationary bike in a health spa, a health club, breathing in the sweat of the rest of the gerbils as they rotate on their little wheels. Because it's cold out, or it's too hot out. I remember one individual I saw on a trail. This was four ladies in their early 30s, all wearing possibly hundreds, if not thousands of dollars worth of jogging shorts and shoes and literally jewelry, had their hair all done. Just perfect, white, perfectly white shoes. And they were walking on this dirt road. And she looked down and said, "My shoes are getting all yucky," she said. She had dust on her shoes. They were doing this little, what they call a jog. It was like this slow motion little dance of movement, probably going a half mile an hour. But they'll go running, quote unquote, on a little trail around a park, about a half mile loop, flat ground, paved. Like that's going to be some kind of a workout. Contrast this with a couple million years of human evolution and what day-to-day life was like for everybody but the richest king. And even the kings don't live as well then as the average person does today, because they didn't have access to health care, central heating. Some of these big Tudor mansions and castles, they only had fireplaces. People expect then, since they've born, and for the vast majority of people, virtually everybody in a first world country, if nothing else has central heat, some kind of shelter, a television. They did a survey, I think 95% of the population had VCRs. That includes all the so-called poor people, all had VCRs and television, cable TV, telephones, heat, and food. And if you weren't going to go out and work for it, eventually someone will just give it to you because you're not allowed to starve to death in the United States of America and most other countries either that are in the first world. In the so-called third world, people have to struggle for existence. They're not comfortable. Our ancestors over millions of years were not comfortable. Life was harsh. And the reason people don't comprehend this is because they just don't understand what happened before they got here. They figured that the history is a past and it doesn't matter, that it doesn't affect them now, and yet it does. Your trajectory, like an artillery shell, was determined by how you were launched. Which direction? You're on a trajectory right now based on what all your ancestors and forefathers and everybody else did before you got here. And if you say you were born in the 50s or the 60s or the 70s, if you were born in the United States of America, the odds are you were born into a, you know, average middle class or lower middle class environment where you may not have been rich, but you had food, you had heat, you had the necessity of life, you went to public schools, you had police protection and fire protection, you had military protection. For countless centuries, people were subject to the whims of a lord and to warlords and, you know, gangs of some various guises, and to be oppressed, to be captured and enslaved. And now you're not in most free first world countries. In effect, you were born comfortable. You were born into a sterile environment in a hospital on clean white linen. You were immediately wrapped up and fed and taken care of and not expected to work. You were reared with decent food, you had good nutrition. Then you went to schools. You weren't required to have a job. You actually weren't required to do much in the schools except get by. They set the bar low enough so most people would just get by. And if they don't, they'll kind of nudge you a little bit and pass you if at all possible. Nobody's making any demands on you. Then you go off into middle school, high school, and even college, where the standards are overall very low. Do the minimum to get by, come out, get a job, take your base, pay your bills, have a small car, get an apartment. You can get by now very easily. Most people in this country have an obesity epidemic, they call it. Well, why is that? Because food is plentiful. It's just so plentiful in that you can just eat forever and your body, after millions of years, thinking it's going to starve to death, whenever it does see food, it just wants to gorge itself. And so that's what people do. And they don't get any exercise because physical labor has been phased out. Only, I think it's less than 1% of the population is required to grow all of our foods. And it's all mechanized for the most part. So there's not a whole lot of physical labor left to it. It's like a factory. There are some people who do physical labor. But a lot of people do repetitive motion tasks, like assembly line work, bricklaying. And yet, yeah, there's some people who do a heavy physical labor, but most people don't. Most of it's automated. Or they bring in other people to do it for them, heavy lifting, at lower wages. So the physical component's really not there. Physical education in schools is the first thing they chop out of the budget. So they tend to do that with music and art and all the rest of it. They kind of like push that out and go with standardized testing. The 3 R's. So really there's not that much need for physical. They don't have to walk to school, get buses or get a ride. Their parents see the kids now. Big long line of cars dropping off the kids, picking up the kids because it's not perceived to be safe anymore to let your kids walk to school in most areas. Even in really beautiful, nice, safe suburbs, they're also paranoid. They drop their kids off, pick them up. Or they live too far away. Or they got rid of the bus service. So the kids don't, you know, typically anymore, in general, they don't walk to school. They don't have a big phys ed program. They're not required to participate in sports. So I don't know what the percentage is, but I don't know. I'm going to guess it's probably less than 20% of the kids get any real physical exercise anymore. They're not required to work in the fields. So all in all, this adds up to what I'm going to call being comfortable. People are obsessed with the idea that they always have to be comfortable. Well, that's fine if you're a farm animal. If I was a sheep, I might as well be comfortable until I get fleeced. And if all you want out of life is the bare minimum, you want to put out the bare minimum effort and just take what you got, and as long as you're not feeling any pain, then that's fine with you. Most people are primarily pain avoidance. They just don't want to have any discomfort. Being comfortable is nice, too, if they can get it. But by all means, let's not get cold or hot or tired or whatever. Let's try to eliminate any discomfort from life. Let's make it easy. And then if I can be even more comfortable, like I was rich, the first thing I'd buy is I'd buy a spacious big home with a jacuzzi tub and walk-in closets an even better, you know, more comfortable heating system, plush carpet, soft down comforters and pillows. I drive around in an LX 470, I think they call them now, the latest version. You ever drive some of these cars, a BMW 8 Series, 7 Series? I drove one of those ones. I would never own one of those cars because they're too comfortable. They would lull me to sleep. I could feel myself. I could feel my muscles softening, my stomach extending. I could feel myself, my brain just pretty much turning off and kind of being lulled into a state of a stupor, like a stupor. They're so smooth, you can go 140 miles an hour without even realizing. It's probably the biggest reason I'll buy one. I get arrested. They're too smooth. You don't get any feedback. You don't feel the road. They completely isolate you like in a cocoon. You might as well, it's like going back into the womb. The leather, it's just too comfortable. It's like crack. You could smoke crack and be in a euphoric state where the reason it's so addicting is because normal life pales to a dull gray compared to being on crack. And that once you're on crack, nothing else seems to work. Alcohol, sex, there's nothing that's exciting that would really move you like that crack. And that's the state we've become in. We're bombarding ourselves constantly with electronic noise. We have radios going. We have iPods. We have television. We have the internet. Constant barrage of artificial electronic noise and stimulation. And what is the purpose of all this? To displace thought. Because the worst, most uncomfortable thing you can do as a human being is engage your brain and think. Thinking hurts your head. Don't think. Go along to get along. Just believe everything will be fine. Thinking makes you look around you and, oh, well, then you start noticing things. Well, this isn't right, and that's not right. That makes you uncomfortable again. It's best to plug you into the grid. Go back to sleep. So what they do is they displace thought, if at all possible, with senseless chatter and conversation, socializing. People come home, the first thing they do before they even reach for the light switch is turn on their television. The first thing they do in their car before they even start the engine is turn on the radio. First thing they do when they go in a group of people is start chattering. First thing they do after work is try to find some other amusement, some other diversion from life. If you add all this up, there's no challenge in life. The bar has been lowered to the point where even anybody can stumble over it. There's no required challenge to survive. You're not allowed to die. Nobody gets to starve to death in the United States of America or most other first world countries. People want to be comfortable. And for the most part, this is perfectly rational behavior. Take a look around you. These are all your fellow Homo sapiens. Why are they doing these things? Why? Because it makes sense to do it that way. That's why they have traditional societies. This is the way it's always been done. This is the way it always will be done. This is the way it should be done. This is the way God intended it to be done. Why are you trying to rock the boat? You rock the boat, people start falling out. Leave it alone. Don't touch it. Don't think. Join the party. Plug in. Perfectly rational behavior, because if you can get through life unscathed and eliminate pain and possibly have some pleasure, then you win. You made it through. If that's all there is to life, there's no purpose to life. There's nothing to obtain or achieve. There's no goals that need to be met. Then that's the best strategy to get there. Just take it the safe path. Right down the middle. Take the middle road. Take it easy. Do the bare minimum. Never run if you can walk. Here's what I learned in the Army, by the way. Never run if you can walk. Never walk if you can stand. Never stand if you can sit down. Never sit down if you can lay down. And never stay awake if you can go to sleep. And anybody who's ever lived through some of that, 22-hour days after day, knows what I'm talking about. You need to conserve your energy. I remember laying down on hard gravel in Oklahoma in 110 degrees with a hard steel helmet over my head, sleeping on a dirt road, because I didn't get sleep for months, 3 hours at a time. So I slept, even if it's only 5 minutes. That 5 minutes might help you. So what's the issue here? There is no issue unless you think that there is more to life than just getting by, that somehow you were put here and there might be a purpose for your life, that maybe there is a higher purpose and a goal, something you should be aiming for and striving towards. That's called ambition or inspiration, and it's a terminal condition. I feel sorry for you if you have it. And yes, it's contagious. Don't ever hang around with other ambitious people. Don't ever hang around with ambitious people, or you might catch it too. And next thing you know, you look around, you won't be satisfied. Being dissatisfied is to be uncomfortable. Being uncomfortable is equated with pain. In Buddhism, they call dissatisfaction dukkha, the state of dissatisfactoriness. Something's just not right. Oh, it's like I was fine, but now I'm kind of getting hungry. The life is no longer satisfactory. So then I eat, really liked what I was eating, so then I ate too much. Now I feel bloated, maybe even getting upset stomach. So for a while there it was good, then it got bad again. And then next day I'm hungry again. Or right now the weather's fine, then it gets dark, now it's not that fine, or it starts to rain. So it's always changing, it's coming and going. If you get attached to the idea that everything should always be perfect and comfortable, then you're in a constant state of anxiety and dissatisfaction. If you disattach from it and you say, oh, now it's light, that's nice. Now it's dark, that's nice. Oh, look, it's cold, that's nice. Now it's hotter, that's nice. Well, I'm hungry, I should eat. Well, now I'm full, it's okay. So you just take it as it comes. You don't attach to any one state. And that's the key to breaking the cycle of needing to be comfortable all the time. What people are afraid of is that somehow if they're uncomfortable, that life is bad. Back to ambition. If you're ambitious and you want to accomplish something, but you were reared in this environment, you're starting life from a really deep hole. You got a long climb ahead just to get back on level ground. You've been, in effect, at a huge disadvantage to anybody else who didn't lead such a comfortable life. Let's say you want to climb Mount Everest. We'll call that a non-trivial task, as they say in science. What kind of person is going to make it up there? The person primarily with an indomitable courage and strength of character who is able to withstand huge amounts of pain to make sacrifice, up to and including losing a limb, frostbite, just immense physical exertion, risk. If required to survive, only the people who have that kind of a background are going to make it. You might have heard of Sparta. Anybody see the movie 300?
No.
The baby was born. And they pretty much tossed it in a snowbank. Then the kid was growing up, he was fighting without a shirt in the snow and just battling. And then they take him out when he's like 8, I think, or 10, and he has to go out and kill a lion with a spear. Go out and live on his own for like 2 years. The movie may have been somewhat exaggerated, maybe not, but Sparta in general had like a, that's why it's known as living a Spartan lifestyle. They slept on stone slabs. They were like a true warrior. Their life was extremely hard, and they were undefeated in battle. So what are you going to do about this? You were, in effect, abused as a child. You were neglected. Your abuse was you were being trained to be comfortable. Your culture, everything around you pushed you in that direction, did you a disservice, because the one thing you're going to get out of your life, your accomplishments, you know, the challenges you met and overcame, you pushing your limits a little bit, these are the things you probably look back on and say, you know, that was my proudest moment. That's what I really appreciate about my life. That and, of course, the people and the relationships and that. But you're not going to do that because you've got to overcome your disadvantages. You were a disadvantaged youth in that you weren't challenged. So how do you convert yourself? You have to fight all of your cultural programming. You have to first, it's almost like cognitive therapy comes first. First off, you have to talk your way through this like I've been doing now, and you have to realize what happened to you, the way you were coddled, the way you were never really pushed or challenged, the way you're almost deterred from doing anything challenging or risky. Oh, don't do that. You can get hurt. Put on your helmet, Johnny. Now all the kids have to wear helmets before they get on the bicycle. They got all these pads and stuff. You know, they have soft, spongy material they put on all the playgrounds in case someone falls off or something. You know what I mean? We had dirt and rocks. We used to throw rocks at each other. I mean, there was no padding. What do you mean padding? So here's an example of how you have to work against your own programming. There's a lot of ways to do karate. There's a lot of these little storefronts, little dojo. On every corner, everybody has a little karate, you know, have little uniforms, and they have their mats, you know, and their gloves, and they all make these little punches to the air. I call them ballerinas. Okay, well, listen to this one. Here's one. Here's a way to learn karate. Number one, it's not a school. It's private. You got invited in by people who observed you and thought you might fit in. The dojo was a cement balcony outside of a building on cement. There was no mats. There was no gloves or other padding. You worked out outdoors. If it was raining, you got wet. And if it was winter and covered with snow and ice, then you worked out on snow and ice. It was basically full contact, and you did knuckle push-ups on cement. It was kind of close to Fight Club without really just trying to beat the shit out of each other. And nobody got in the rank just because they paid their bills. And it was a style that was taught to a military. It was a military style of karate. It was taught to soldiers to survive in combat. That's the kind of style it was. It was one of the kind of styles. Every punch and every kick was full force. There's no sense in throwing it. Why practice using half-assed kicks? You want to practice the kick that's going to save your life, the kick that's going to take the opponent down. Full force. Every punch was full force. At the end of an hour and a half of that, your arms hurt. Your knuckles were bleeding. You've got kicked in the nuts a few times, maybe smacked upside the head. Or you can go to one of those little mall dojos and work out for maybe 30 minutes. But well, 50 minutes, I think they work out. Half of which is listening to some philosophy. Right? You get out and half the kids aren't even sweating. Everybody gets ranked together. Oh, you've been there for 6 weeks? Okay, you're a yellow belt. You don't necessarily stretch first before you do a fight because you don't have time to stretch if you're being mugged at an ATM. It may be dark out. It may be raining. You know what I'm saying? It may be snowing. It may be ice on the ground. It's not well lit. You have no notice. Which one do you think prepares you more for the real world? Anybody?
Fight Club.
I found that because I just come out of the Army, and I was going to school, and I took a self-defense class because I always wanted to learn karate. You know, I just really got into it, so I was kicking the cinder block wall over and over again because I was half crazy anyway. And he said, well, you really should come to our group. We meet on Thursday nights and Sundays, early in the morning. I don't know if I want to do that now. I'm not much for groups, so I kept doing it. He said, no, really, you got to try. I went down there, and that's what I found when I got there. When I got there, it was this green belt. And when I got my black belt, he was still a green belt. Okay? Because he didn't show up and he wasn't serious. Well, I did that because I was going to college and I was doing something really difficult for me. I was going to do a physics degree, which I felt sounded cool to do. I figured I wanted to do the hardest thing I could figure out doing. Especially when I was almost math phobic going into the thing. I overcame that too. So I was just really into pushing my limits. It was like a game I was playing with life. I want to see what I could do. Which is why I joined the Army, and which is why I did that club, which is why I did a lot of things. I was just trying to, let's see what would happen. Let me push the limits and see what happens. Let's play a little game with life, right? To have some fun with it. So they invited me in, and, that's what I did. And I saw, and every punch was as hard as I could possibly throw it. Everyone hurt. Every punch hurt. Boom, boom, boom. You sit there back and forth, left, right, left, right, left, right, for like 10 minutes. Then kicks, and every kick hurt, or you're not throwing hard enough. The thing is, you don't want to throw a soft punch, and there's no screaming and yelling, all this other theatrical bullshit. You don't do that. Punch. Anyway, I'm bringing this up because the only way you're going to overcome, if you want to achieve top 1% status in sales, you have to live a top 1% life. And the only way you'll do that is you have to disavow and disassociate yourself from all popular culture and popular social programming, which is all of them are telling you to take it easy, have another Twinkie, watch some more TV. Everything around you is telling you that it's easy. Yeah, you don't have to strive. Don't worry about it. You don't have to do that. Let's go out and have a beer. All your friends will tell you that. Like I said, ambition is contagious and it's terminal. If you have this condition, my condolences. If you have some higher purpose in life, you're striving to condition yourself to achieve, like someone trying to get the Olympic gold. They don't want a silver. They're going for the gold. Why? Because they just want to see what they can do with their life. They want to push themselves a little bit. They want a goal to attain. So a year ago, I used to do a lot of push-ups. Then I started having this problem in my back, and I went to a chiropractor, and I got talked out of doing push-ups. So I went, like, for 5 years, and I just did sit-ups and running and stuff. And I was in pretty good shape, but my arms pretty much atrophied. So a little over a year ago, I just said, you know, this is just bad news. I mean, you know, I have no muscle tone. I got to go back, and I went, the hell with my chiropractor. So I started doing push-ups. I went down, I did 3 push-ups, and my arms hurt for a week. They were just agony. Boy, that really hurt. I was embarrassed. So anyway, a couple days later, I did like 5 push-ups. I said, okay, I'm going to do 5 a day. Then I'm going to do 10. So I got it up to 10. I go, wow, this just really hurt. And so I did 10. I did like 2 days a week I was running, so I'll do push-ups. And I did 10 push-ups. Then I made, I'll do 20. I'll do 10 and 10. Then I was making it a little bit easier, so I said, no, I'll do 20. So I did 20. But then I decided to do 5 sets of 20, get up to 100. I was really proud of myself. I'm doing 100 push-ups. You know, at that point, I'm actually getting a little bit of muscle tone back in my arms. So at that point, I said, I got it up to 200. I would do 20 push-ups 10 times. I'd run for a while, do 20 push-ups, and actually 10, and I eventually got up to 20. That was what I used to do, because in the Army, you drop, you do 20 push-ups, so it's kind of like the standard, do 20 push-ups. So I kept doing that, and I got up to I got up to 300. I was telling my son, I go, we were watching that movie 300. I said, that's one for every one of the Spartans, you know. And he thought that was pretty cool. So I decided to make a game out of it, so that was already more than I thought I was ever going to accomplish. I wanted to see how many I could do. So I kept doing more and more, and I went up to 40 at a time, then I went to 50 push-ups at a time. I would do 10 of those. I got to 500. Then I got up to 15 of those. That was 750. Then on December 31st, literally, the last day of the year, I said by the end of the year I was going to get up to 1,000. That was my goal. It was more than I ever thought I could ever do. I want to do 100 push-ups at a time, 10 times. So that first time I went down, I cranked out 100 push-ups, and my arms were pretty sore, but I had to do it 9 more times. So I got up to 1,000 on December 31st. I figured that's it, because I'm going to commit to doing that now every time I go running, 3 days a week. Then I thought, I was starting to get easy after about 4 weeks. I'll do 2 more hundreds. That's 1,200. And 2 weeks ago, I said, I'll try for 3 more. I got up to 1,500. So I mean, I keep growing on this thing, but the point being is now I'm doing 1,500 push-ups, but I'm going to show how easy this is. It's not 1,500. I do 15 sets of 100. But each set is really, I do 5 and 5. I do 5 and 5, I do 5 and 5, and then 5 and 5, and then 5 and 5 and 5, that's 50, right? Then I simply repeat that again. So I'm counting the 5s. I count the 5. 1, 2, 3, 5. 1, 2, 3, 5, that's 10. I do that 5 times, that's 50. Then I do that another time, and that's 100. So I'm never doing more than 5 push-ups psychologically. In my subconscious, I told it that I'm only doing 5 push-ups because for all practical purposes, that's all I'm ever doing. Since the subconscious, you can't see the future or the past. It doesn't know that I just did 5. It has no clue. If I did 6 sets of 100 and I'm about to do a 7th, the other 6 sets don't exist anymore. Who cares? And the one to come after doesn't exist yet, so who cares? I'm only down there. I'm only living in the now, doing the now, right? Okay, so here's the deal. Anybody who's reasonably physically fit, anybody can do exactly what I did. I didn't say you're going to do 1,500 push-ups tomorrow. I said I started with 3, then 5, then 10, then 20, and so on. Eventually, you condition your muscle. It's a slow change. It's exactly the same process of learning a foreign language. You're not fluent next week. You know, you learn a couple words, and you learn how to do some sentences, and you learn, you know, eventually after a year, you know, you're reasonably fluent after 2 years and so on. You just get better playing a guitar or a piano or any other sport, any musical instrument. It just takes time, but in our instant gratification, quote-unquote society, where everything has to be easy and fast, it's easier to pick up the old air guitar than learn how to play a guitar. But anybody probably can get reasonably good at almost any musical instrument. Anybody. You want to play a harp or a piano, you might never be great at it, but you can probably have fun at it if you, you know, worked at it. The problem nowadays with everybody growing up, making things all easy and comfortable with a self-esteem movement, nobody is playing instruments anymore. They're playing video games because they don't have the patience to do it. They want it to be easy.